This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. If you've filled your gas tank lately, you've probably noticed that the price of gas is on the rise. Last week, the Energy Department reported the price had hit a record high of more than $1.75 a gallon. In states such as California and Alaska, the price has already topped $2 a gallon. Not surprisingly, both political parties are trying to parlay the price of gas into a campaign issue. Presumptive Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry has criticized the Bush administration for its failure to pressure OPEC to increase production of crude. And the Bush campaign is running an ad criticizing Kerry for supporting higher gas taxes. So just how bad is the situation, really? And what are the factors that lead to increases in the price of gas? Today on Talk of the Nation, a primer on the price of oil. Later this hour, an update on the situation in Iraq as the U.S. military faces down a Shiite uprising there, and a profile of renegade Shiite cleric Muqtada Sadr. But first, the price at the pumps. Have you noticed prices rising where you live? Have you changed your own consumption habits as a result? Do you wonder why the price of gas is going up? And is this an issue that might affect the way you vote in the upcoming presidential election? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now here in Studio 3A is Robert Ebel. He's chairman of the Energy Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Why is the price so high right now, Mr. Ebel?
Well, our supply-demand situation is very tight. And, of course, as everybody knows, the OPEC member countries are trying to take steps to keep prices high by reducing production. What's happening worldwide is a continued growth in demand, and most of that growth in demand is taking place not in the United States, not in Europe, but in the Asia-Pacific region, China, Japan, Korea, and India. In fact, if I look back for the past 13, 14 years, about 70% of the growth in world oil demand is taking place in that part of the world, and they're continuing to grow. So that's where most of the oil is heading these days, not the United States, not Europe, but to the Asia-Pacific region.
And in this country, though, in terms of demand, there are seasonal differences, aren't there? Can you explain what happens at different times of the year in terms of the demand for oil?
Well, we're coming out of the heating season now, but we haven't started the driving season yet. So the maximized production of gasoline at the refineries is down the road a bit. At the same time, when we're coming out of the heating season and before the driving season, we'll shut down a number of the refineries for maintenance, just like having to take your car in every now and then for a lube job and an oil change. You have to do somewhat the same thing for an oil refinery. So that takes refining capacity out of play for a while. We keep our fingers crossed that demand doesn't continue to grow during that period of time, but every now and then we do get caught.
So a number of factors have to be in play in order to explain where the price
is. That's right. There's no simple answer. You know, we could talk for why gasoline prices are high for half an hour. The OPEC member countries look at our environmental restrictions, particularly on what we call boutique gasolines, the kinds of gasolines, for example, that are consumed in California that have reduced polluting effects. They also think, well, you know, the United States hasn't built a new refinery in 25 years, so they're short of refining capacity. That's part of the problem. Another part of the problem is that the value of the dollar has come down this year rather substantially, and therefore, for them to maintain their purchasing power, they've got to raise prices. So they're putting all sorts of reasons on the table. So it's not a simple, you know, approach. It's a complex answer.
To what degree is the United States dependent on foreign oil? I mean, that's the phrase you hear constantly when you're talking about this
about issue. 60% of the oil that we consume comes from abroad, comes from nations whose national interests may not always be, you know, in our own interests. And we're never going to get rid of that dependence the way we're going. We have to bite the bullet, particularly on the consumption side. But we're not ready to do that. We're not prepared to do that. We don't have the political will that it would take to let's suppose, put a high gasoline tax on to cut consumption, or to mandate higher CAFE standards for the automobiles and light trucks that we produce. We just don't have the political will right now to do that.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, you'll hear people complaining, well, the price of gas is going up. The price of gas is going up.
Well, I like to use this, the following analogy. The average Mrs. Consumer, she goes to her favorite shopping center and goes to the grocery store, and she pays $4 for a gallon of water for her family. And then she stops off at the local Starbucks to have a latte or a cappuccino with her friends and pays $3.50 for a cappuccino. And then on the way home, she notes that she's a little short on gasoline, and she fills up at the pump, and it costs her $1.75. And, of course, she complains, the high price of gasoline.
And Mr. Consumer
to make
does
some
the
choices.
Same thing.
Right, I'm sorry.
And Mr. Consumer does the same thing, I presume.
Absolutely. It's not just Mrs., but it's Mr. But people love to complain about the price of gasoline because it's never low enough.
Yeah.
It's when you come to buying water or buying a cup of coffee, that's discretionary, and you don't have to do that. But you have to have the gasoline and to move your family around, to go to work. It's a must. And we just love to complain about it.
Well, the Energy Department reported last week, I think it was, that the price of gasoline had reached a record high. But is it really a record high? If
it's a record high in nominal terms. But if I took inflation into account, the price of gasoline today is less than what it was back in the early 1980s. But people don't want to hear that. You know, they say, I don't think in terms of real prices. I think in terms of nominal prices. And what can you do to reduce the price of gasoline for me? But I would also make the observation that I don't care who's in the White House, whether it's Republican or Democrat, there is very little that can be done over the short term to reduce the price of a gallon of gasoline.
Well, as long as we are talking about politics and gas, we have some tape we wanted to listen to. We've been talking about how passionate Americans can get about gas prices. And, of course, politicians are hearing those cries. Recently, Senator Kerry, the presumed Democratic nominee, stumped on the cost of gas. Let's hear that tape.
If the gas prices keep rising at the rate they're going now, Dick Cheney and George Bush are going to have to carpool to work. Those aren't Exxon prices. Those are Halliburton prices.
And, of course, the Bush-Cheney campaign did not shy away from the gas issue. Here's an ad that's currently running on television.
Some people have wacky ideas, like taxing gasoline more so people drive less. That's John Kerry. He's supported a 50-cent a gallon gas tax. If Kerry's gas tax increase were law, the average family would pay $657 more a year. Raising taxes is a habit of Kerry's. He's supported higher gasoline taxes 11 times. Maybe John Kerry just doesn't understand what his ideas mean to the rest of us.
Joining us now from KPBS in San Diego, California, is NPR business reporter Scott Horsley. In addition to following the business of gas and oil, he's also followed how it's played out in the presidential election so far. Thanks for being with us today, Scott.
Good to be with you, Lynn.
Now, Scott, you did the math on that tax ad we just heard. Would Americans really be paying $657 a year more for gas?
Well, some Americans would. It's probably important to preface this by noting that Senator Kerry has certainly distanced himself now from that past support of a 50-cent per gallon gas tax. But I was curious because that $657 figure sounded high to me. The assumption there would mean that the average family was burning 1,300 gallons of gas a year. And again, that sounded high. But if you had two cars and they each got the 21 miles to the gallon, that is the average for cars made last year, which, by the way, is down considerably from the late 80s, and each of those cars was driven 13,500 miles, you would, in fact, get $657 a year in extra cost. 13,500 miles is, I'd say, on the high side for typical drivers, but not outrageously high. Then I decided to just go a step further and say, well, what if that gas tax made you actually go out and buy a more efficient car, not a super efficient hybrid, but say a Honda Accord or a Ford Focus that get around 30 miles to the gallon? You would still have to pay $200 more in taxes, but you'd save $700 in gas.
Hmm. Now, what specific policies is each campaign laying out on this issue?
Well, you heard the cut from Senator Kerry. That was delivered here in San Diego last week, and San Diego has some of the nation's highest gasoline prices. while he was here, Senator Kerry outlined a three-point plan that he said would help to control the cost of gas. One, he said that the federal government should stop filling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, thereby freeing up more crude oil to make gasoline with. He said that we should simplify this patchwork of refining blends, the boutique gasolines that Robert Ebel was talking about. And lastly, that the administration should do more to lobby OPEC to up the supply of gas. The economists I've talked to said that changing the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, stopping the filling of that, wouldn't probably do much, but that doing something about this patchwork of boutique blends might help, not in the short run, but over time.
Well, how much effect? We just heard Robert Ebel say that a president can't really have that much effect. How much effect would you say a president can have on the price of gas?
Well, I think he's right. Certainly in the short run, the president can't have much effect on the price of gas. And over time, perhaps the president with the Congress could have some effect. But as he said, it takes a lot of political will to do that. And so far, we haven't been able to muster that. The Bush White House said last week that they were doing all they could to address the high cost of gasoline, and they said Americans wouldn't be paying that high price if, in fact, Congress had passed the president's energy plan. Of course, the energy plan was stalled for a long time and hasn't gone anywhere.
All right, let's see if we can get a call in now from David, and he's in Keene, New Hampshire. Hi, David.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that I think raising the gas is a good, it could be a good thing.
Raising the price of gas, is that what you're saying? Why is that?
Number one, it'll cut down on pollution. Number two, people will be less frivolous and kill more birds at one stone. And number three, also, hopefully it would encourage exercise and less congestion in cities and things.
Well, it's interesting, David. You know, the president's own chief economic advisor, Greg Mankiw, made similar arguments about 5 years ago in an article he wrote for Fortune magazine. John Kerry pointed that out after the president began criticizing the 50-cent gas tax increase plan. I think there are a lot of economists who think there would be substantial gains from this sort of increase in taxes. But Robert Ebel's pointed out, it's pretty unlikely that there's much political will to do something like that.
Well, Robert Ebel, what effect does the cost of gas have on people's individual habits, on whether or not they're going to walk instead of drive, those kinds of things?
I would observe that if some gentleman, some congressman or senator stood up in the halls of Congress and said, I'm prepared to introduce a bill to raise tax on gasoline by 25 or 30 cents, the phones would start ringing immediately. Calls would be coming in from truck drivers all over the United States, from taxi drivers, from delivery people, and particularly from farmers, people whose very livelihood and their income depended upon would be reflected in the price of gasoline. So a congressman or senator might believe that's the way to go, but he's not going to say it as long as he's in office. He might say it the day after, but not when he's in office. Pricing gasoline is a very tricky subject. The price of gasoline in the United States, it reflects largely the price of a barrel of crude oil. In Europe, in the UK, in Australia, where taxes are very high, an increase in the price of a barrel of crude oil isn't reflected as much in the final price of a gallon of gasoline, because taxes make up the larger portion of the price. But in the United States, it's not true. Crude oil makes up a larger share.
We are talking
about 50% for crude oil and 30% for taxes here, right? Would be kind of the opposite in Europe.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're talking about Americans' passion for prices at the pump and what really affects the price of gas. And we're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. My guests are Scott Horsley, NPR business reporter, and Robert Ebel, chairman of the energy program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. You can send us an email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Oil prices are a perennial issue. Today we're getting a primer on all the variables that affect the price of oil. You're invited to join the discussion. What are your questions about what affects the price of heating oil and gas? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. I'm joined in Studio 3A by Robert Ebel, chairman of the Energy Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Also joining us, Scott Horsley. He is NPR's business reporter. Scott, I wanted to ask you about the politics of this. How important do you think this issue really is going to be in the presidential campaign?
Well, that's a good question. You know, we've said that the president can't do very much about the price of gas, but maybe the price of gas has something to do with who gets to be president. Obviously, Senator Kerry thinks he has a live issue here as the price goes up, and he's been making noise on this. And I think it's safe to say that last week, at least, the White House was sort of playing defense on this subject. But there's a pollster in Michigan, of all places, who's done some research on this, who really suspects that unless the price goes up around $3 a gallon, $3 a gallon doesn't really begin to affect people. They moan and groan a lot, but it doesn't really affect their behavior, and presumably wouldn't really affect their voting behavior either.
It's interesting to hear you say $3, because I was wondering before, when both you and Robert Ebel were talking about the fact that the political will is not there really for people to start changing their habits, and I was wondering how high does the price have to get before people really do take those kinds of measures, and you seem to have put it at $3.
Well, it's interesting. When we go out and we visit gas stations and we talk to people, you hear lots of complaints, and people also say they are adjusting their driving habits. People say, oh, I'm cutting out discretionary trips. We heard from a woman last week who said, oh, I canceled a family vacation with my kids because of the price of gas. And there's perhaps some of that going on, but there's less than people are saying. When the Energy Department every week puts out statistics on what gas consumption is like, and that continues to rise week by week. We're up around 3-4% higher this year than we were at the same time last year. So people say they're driving less. They don't really drive less. That's what you can really do in the short run. And, of course, in the long run, it may affect the kind of cars people drive. But what we've found over the last couple of decades is that the price of gas really has to stay high in real terms for a sustained period before people will go out and buy smaller, more fuel-efficient cars.
Bob Ebel, John Kerry has criticized the Bush administration for not pressuring OPEC to increase production, and specifically not using its relationship with Saudi Arabia to that end. Is that something the administration could be doing?
Well, I think they have to be very careful in pressuring OPEC, if, and particularly Saudi Arabia, because of the implications that pressure would have. In other words, Saudi Arabia would have to be careful not to be seen as in the pockets of the United States. But Saudi Arabia has already told us last week that they will see to it that there's ample oil on the market. And when they made that statement, I think prices come down a bit. But any pressure, any overt pressure that we might make on OPEC in general could be counterproductive. So I would really counsel against it.
I might just say, Lynn, Senator Kerry there is taking a page from the playbook of George W. Bush himself, who said very much the same thing 4 years ago, that the Clinton administration ought to be doing more to get OPEC to loosen the taps a bit.
And, of course, that points towards the fact, Bob Ebel, that this is a cyclical issue. This is an issue that comes around again and again and again.
It does, but the oil price is cyclical, mm-hmm. and that's why it comes around again and again. A price increase, if you look at it closely, contains the seeds of a price decrease, because as the prices go up, it brings new supply onto the market and dampens demand. And pretty soon, demand and supply balance out, and supply begins to overwhelm demand. Prices decline. But as prices decline, demand goes up and new supplies come off the market. So we're in this continual price volatility, up and down, up and down. And it's something that the consumer has to adjust to, but he hasn't indicated any willingness to do that yet.
Can you imagine it getting to that $3 mark that Scott Horsley
Not really. I did note that, as he has, that the consumption of gasoline in the United States continues to increase, that the sales of SUVs this year are higher than what they were at the same time last year. So the impact of higher gasoline has not yet shown up in our driving habits or in our purchase of new cars.
All right, we're going to take a call now from Bobby in Boise, Idaho. Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My point is exactly about the car issue. I drive a Toyota Prius, and I spent extra money for it just to reduce consumption and emissions. And I'm thinking rather than taxing gasoline, which would affect me when I'm already trying to do what I can, and tax the SUVs, the large consuming vehicles, not necessarily the drivers, you know, the professional truck drivers, but people that just have an SUV to drive around town in, and there's one or two people in their vehicle at all times.
And it's interesting to note, Bobby, I think that Scott Horsley recently reported on NPR that there's long waiting lists for the Prius. Isn't that right, Scott?
I don't know if there was in Boise. Here in San Diego, the waiting list is 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, I don't think it's that long now. They're starting. They used to not carry them on the lot. Now they're carrying them on the lot. So I actually bought mine off the lot.
Well, what about this idea of taxing the cars that use the most gas?
You could tax them on the weight basis. That's possible. But in the Clinton administration, they made the mistake of allowing SUVs to be classified as light trucks, and that it took them outside the constraints of the higher CAFE standards. But if you look at buying a Prius, how much more do you have would pay for a Prius than a car that was not a hybrid electric? And how long would it take you to recover that extra cost through reduced gasoline consumption?
All right, thanks so much for your call.
Yeah.
We're going to take another call now from John. He's in Holland, Michigan, I think it is. Hi, John. John, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, go ahead.
My question is, in our area, Grand Rapids, Muskegon, Holland, Michigan, weekends, the price will go up a quarter a gallon on Thursday and then drop down a quarter on Monday. It reflects nothing to do with OPEC or taxation or anything.
Mr. Ebel?
But it seems to me I'm not aware of that. But if it is the way you describe it, people are taking advantage of the market. That is, they know there'll be more driving on the weekend than during the week, and so they raise prices.
Yeah, we have the feeling that it's almost like a house payment's due, so I better raise my price.
Well, thanks so much for your call, John. That does remind me of a question I did want to bring up with you, Mr. Ewell, and that is regional differences. There are a lot of regional differences.
There's tremendous regional differences, even in the state of Virginia. If you drive south to Roanoke, you would, which is about a four-hour drive south from Washington, D.C., you would find that gasoline prices normally run 15, 20, 25 cents cheaper. It's basically what the market would bear. If I take my house and I moved it to, for example, from McLean, Virginia, to Roanoke, Virginia, I'd probably cut the value of it in half. It represents what the locality is capable of handling in monetary terms, both in terms of real estate and in gasoline.
And Scott Horsley, before you go, perhaps you could just update us on the situation in California, which is ahead of a lot of the nation in terms of the price of gas.
Well, let's hope it's also ahead in terms of the trajectory, because our prices mercifully have been coming down in the last few weeks, although coming down from a peak up around 220 to 225 a gallon. They've fallen in recent weeks. They're up a little bit today compared to yesterday, but our price in San Diego now I think is around 215 a gallon.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Scott.
My pleasure.
NPR business correspondent Scott Horsley. Let's take another call now from William. He's in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, William.
Hi. My question is, how much of the recent run-up in the price of gasoline can be ascribed to the fact that the dollar, U.S. dollar, is weak against foreign currencies?
One of the rationales that OPEC put forward when they took steps to cut supply and therefore continue to hold prices high was that they needed to somehow offset the decline in the value of the dollar. The dollar is used in the buying and selling of crude oil, and the dollar is down roughly 20% in Europe. So they've lost their purchasing power, has come down 20%. So they say, well, reflecting that, we've got to have higher prices to at least to protect our purchasing power. So that was one of the first rationales that OPEC used when they cut production at the beginning of the year.
Okay, well, thanks so much.
Would 20% decrease then would put us in a $1.30 range?
No, the decline in the value of the dollar meant that they had to raise the price of oil.
No, but my point is, if the dollar were worth 20% more, then we could buy more oil, and it would put the oil.
Yeah, but it's not. It's worth 20% less.
I know. So the oil costs more.
No, because
we have to spend more dollars to get the oil. Because
they raised the price.
Our currency is so cheap.
No. The price of oil went up when they cut supply, and they cut supply to maximize price to offset the decline in the value of the dollar.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, William. Now that we've covered the basics of oil pricing, we thought we'd throw another factor into the conversation, commodities, futures, how speculation is factored into oil prices. We're joined now by Phil Flynn. He's at his office in Chicago, where he's the vice president and senior oil analyst at Aileron Trading. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Lynn.
Maybe you can explain what oil commodities are for us.
Well, basically what they are, they're contracts set for future delivery of oil, essentially. And basically, what traders use is for, you have speculators and hedgers that use this market as an insurance policy against future price risks. So very simply, what it is a market that determines what the price of a particular commodity will be in the future.
All right. And so how will that affect the price for consumers, or does it?
Well, I think historically it's actually kept the price of oil down. One of the best ways that we know what prices are is for the marketplace to be free and open. And if everybody knows what the price is, that usually keeps prices down because it's very, very competitive. Of course, there's been a lot of speculation that maybe, just maybe, that speculators have run the price of oil up. And usually that criticism comes from OPEC because they use the speculator as a scapegoat when they want to explain high oil prices.
How do businesses use the price of oil futures?
I'm sorry?
How do businesses use the oil future prices?
Basically, they use it as an insurance policy. And you'd be amazed at the people that use the futures market to protect their costs. For example, if you own a big trucking company, if you own an airline, the fluctuations in the price of oil can have a major impact on your bottom line. But these traders can essentially use the futures market to lock in today's price for future delivery. For example, crude oil prices just a couple weeks ago were above $38 a barrel. They fell quite dramatically down to about $34 or $35 a barrel. If you're a business and you're afraid about prices going back up, you can lock this price in today. And if it goes back up to $38 a barrel, you're covered because you've made money in the futures market to protect yourself. So it's an invaluable tool for businesses if used correctly.
You mentioned the trucking business as an example. What are some of the other businesses that use this to great effect?
Everybody, any user can use it, or any producer of oil. For example, ExxonMobil may use it to hedge off their sales. Any buyer of oil, taxi cab companies, owners of condos, the list goes on and on. Essentially, any business that uses a substantial amount of energy, it can be electricity, it can be gasoline, it can be heating costs, can use this market to hedge it. As well as producers that have to deliver this product, they too can use this market to protect themselves. I like to think of it as price protection. It's an insurance policy against big adverse price movements.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Phil Flynn is the Vice President and Senior Oil Analyst at Aileron Trading. He was on the phone from his office in Chicago, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We are talking about the price of oil and how we arrive at the price of oil and how that eventually reaches you at your gas pump. If you have any questions for our guest, give us a call. The number is 1-800-989-8255, and we're going to take a call now from Keith, and he's in New Jersey. Hi, Keith.
Yeah, how you doing? Speaking about the other caller earlier said that the 50 cent tax on fuel would be a good idea. That's insane because I own a small trucking company, and if the fuel costs are raised, I'm going to pass that cost on to the people I'm carrying freight for, whether it be a jean company or a food company. So therefore, the customers of that store is going to pay more money. And as far as the other gentleman speaking about getting a lock on the fuel prices, I only own 5 tractors. And you have to have a minimum amount of fuel purchased from the same company before they'll give you a lock. And for smaller companies, that's not practical.
Mr. Ebel, thanks for your call.
Yes, earlier I had mentioned that any attempt by Congress to impose a 50-cent gasoline tax would immediately be followed by telephone calls from truckers, from delivery people, from taxi drivers, all those people whose income is really reflected in large part by what they have to pay for a gallon of gasoline. Even the farmers would be phoning their representatives and saying, you can't let that happen.
All right, let's take one more call. Richard, I think he's in Colorado. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you doing? The reason I'm calling is I disagree with your first caller that you had, is because I live in a small town, and the community is about 400 people, and I have to travel 40 miles out of town just to get to work daily. And, you know, it takes a big old consumption out of my pocket because I have a little Festiva, and I average 35 miles on it to a gallon. And
how much are you paying now?
Last year, the gas went up 30 cents within a week. It was from $1.59 down to now it's like $1.89 a gallon.
And where are you living again? I'm sorry, Richard.
It's a small town in San Luis. It's the oldest town in Colorado. It's 20 miles border of New Mexico.
It was a good point, Richard, because you're in an area, I presume, where you have to travel a lot, and those are the people who sometimes get hurt the most by these kinds of high gas prices. Thanks so much for your call. I'm going to ask our guest to respond.
Sure.
Two things come to mind. One, I suspect that you're in living in a remote area, and much of the gasoline has to be trucked in, which raises the cost. You're probably quite a distance removed from refineries or from major pipelines. And second, I wasn't quite certain what grade gasoline is the price. Do you use regular or high test?
He's off the line now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, but that would be my question. Would be, you know, you've got to relate your price to what quality gasoline you're consuming, because there's quite a bit of difference.
Yeah. But again, making the point that for those people who are really dependent on their cars to drive long distances, especially for work, these are the people who are really hurt by this, and sure, maybe that's where the politics will come into it. Thanks so much for being with us today, Mr. Ebel. Robert Ebel is chairman of the Energy Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. When we come back from a short break, we'll turn to Iraq, where a series of Shiite uprisings led by an anti-American cleric have led to the deaths of over 50 Iraqis and 8 U.S. troops. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.